Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about an initiative to see more closely the issues confronting the Greenwood District in North Tulsa from the seat of a bicycle. Multimedia artist Shane Darwin and community advocate Colby Ari have been collaborating on a public art project that will be a public gathering space at the site of the new USA BMX facility in North Tulsa. That public art project will culminate this fall. And out of that collaboration comes a second engagement project that involves the whole community. From Bridging the Gap, the name of the public art project, comes Cycling the Gap, a community-engaged bike ride series beginning this Saturday at Guthrie Green at 3 o'clock. For the next three weekends, Darwin and Ari will lead riders on a cyclist tour of North Tulsa while examining issues of sustainability, infrastructure, and Black entrepreneurism. The 4 to 8 mile rides will feature stops where riders will hear from local scholars, forage for wild growing edible plants, witness a sound and film projection installation at a highway underpass, and visit Black businesses and art studios during the three weekend rides. It's co-sponsored by the Tulsa Hub and the Tulsa Artist Fellowship. The rides are open to all. I'm joined by the collaborators of the two projects, Shane Darwin, a multimedia artist and Tulsa Artist Fellow, and Colby Ari, artist and community advocate. You can learn more by searching for Cycling the Gap on Facebook or your favorite search engine. They join us today to talk about Cycling the Gap. Shane and Colby, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Cycling the Gap is a three-part bike ride series, which begins this Saturday, taking place in North Tulsa over three weekends on three themes: sustainability, infrastructure, and Black art and commerce. What was the inspiration for this series?
Well, it was early in 2020 when Colby and I and our collaborator, Adam Baldwin, received word that we got the Public Art Commission for the USA BMX Plaza that's being built at the old Evans FinTube site. And Colby and I sort of saw an opportunity to try to connect this permanent large-scale artwork with the, you know, really complicated, nuanced landscape of North Tulsa, where it was going to reside. We felt like it was, you know, bikes are a huge part of both of our lives outside of the arts, just sort of in becoming full humans. So it seemed, you know, with the public sculpture happening at USA BMX and both of us being avid cyclists, it just seemed like a sort of a really logical next step to do some public programming that revolved around cycling.
Now, the public art project will definitely touch on the land that it exists on and this long, sordid history. That will be a big part of this public sculpture. Tell us about the next part of this in creating a bike ride that gives more insight into that history.
Well, I think it's important to touch on like what the details of the RFP were, which were somehow... The task that we were given was somehow marry what BMX is and what it represents to the historic Greenwood District. And that sounds like a really tall, like impossible connection. And yet I think for Shane and I, it was really easy as people who have grown up with bikes to be able to see how you can have this connection to these topics of sustainability, infrastructure, art, economic development, and how they are rooted to an upward mobility device like a bike, you know, that just takes your energy and can take you wherever you have the will to go.
Well, there are a lot of ways you could have told this story. Why a bike is the best way to explore these questions?
I mean, bikes can bring you to parts of the city that are inaccessible to cars in some way, or they can sort of bring you to aspects of the landscape where you can sort of experience it in a sensory way. You can hear things, you can smell things, you can taste things in a way that sort of when you're in a car and you have the windows rolled up,
truly,
and you have the radio on and you're listening to Studio Tulsa, you can't experience it. So we thought that sort of bikes would be this way to really bring people this level of intimacy to experiencing North Tulsa.
And it's closer to a walking speed,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you really have time to look around you as opposed to a vehicle,
totally.
a powered vehicle, where you see it now and it's gone.
Yeah, it's just like a walking tour in that you're sort of like slow and deliberately sort of thinking about the landscape, but you can go a little bit further. And so you can sort of see the sort of arc of a space in a slightly different way than you could if you were on a walking tour.
Well, before we talk about the cycling tours themselves, let's talk a little bit about the public art piece that is sort of inspired the cycling tour. Bridging the Gap is, again, this installation that will be at the plaza of the new USA BMX headquarters in North Tulsa. What were you trying to accomplish with the three of you, actually, with this public art installation? It's telling a lot of stories, it sounds like.
You know, as Colby mentioned, the RFP was super complicated. And when we first looked at it, you know, it was kind of laughably complicated. How do you marry these things? But we started to kind of like pick the constituent sort of elements apart, started to look at the archival images of Greenwood sort of post 1921 massacre and start to look at the sort of the formal characteristics of it. And one of the things that really started to strike me were the chimneys that were left in that landscape, these kind of impossibly upright forms sort of standing over, you know, sort of brick
rubble. Devastation, really, exactly. In many places.
And the chimneys were sort of this symbolic formal sort of conduit for us. They were the hearth to a home, right? They sort of provided this kind of regeneration and fuel and a space to cook food for a lot of folks. And so they really kind of were these charged kind of symbols. And then we started to look at a BMX track, right? So if you look at the topography of a BMX track, there's these kind of roller sections. So we kind of sliced that apart, and we started to kind of formally just marry these two elements together. And so some of the main components of the sculptural installation are these five upright columns that undulate like a BMX track if you turned it on its side, but that are brick stamped and sort of reference these kind of stylized chimneys. And maybe Colby, if you want to talk about the stairs that are...
Sure. So, you know, one of the most iconic images of the destruction and the resilience, again, just like those chimneys, are the stairs to nowhere. And I think as a community in Tulsa, we're all very aware that those exist and what was. And it's interesting to take those elements and create a space that allows people that are coming in from, you know, all around the country, maybe internationally, to do these BMX races, to know that these were homes, these were businesses, and this is and was a place. And you should know that you're on this hallowed ground. You should be able to orient yourself and understand where you are, not just why you're here, but where you happen to be standing. And I mean, that kind of goes to USA BMX as an institution as well. There are bronze inlays around the stairs and the columns, which have these sort of community values that I personally live by in a lot of the work that I do, all of the work that I do in sustainability, equity, and access. So I think of those columns just the same as cultural stakes in the ground, saying that like we're still here. And those values are what we can use as a community to make sure that USA BMX is still accountable as a community partner in the space that we share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and frankly, it is a sport that I think of as being, how do I say it? It's sort of...
predominantly white?
Yeah.
I think it's important to note that I don't think anyone in Tulsa, especially North Tulsa, was asking for USA BMX, and I think that is important to mention. That said, I think that Shane and I, with our background in kind of understanding urban design, community design, and the benefits of a bike, it's really fascinating to have this type of community partner in a community that has been devastated twice over by the true enemies of like a bicycle, which are like developments like the highway or the very vast surface parking lots of OSU, you know, which are these completely like inefficient, pretty much redundant pieces of infrastructure that cost incredible amounts of money that don't really do anything for anybody, versus a bike, which is fairly cheap and accessible and can really be anything that you're able to put into it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just really interesting to consider that, like, you know, this project really highlights that dichotomy that exists in North Tulsa and how USA BMX can play a part in helping facilitate, you know, a correction in the built environment that is more equitable, that is more sustainable and accessible for all Tulsans, but specifically North Tulsans, where they have chosen to set up their home.
Do you anticipate the plaza being a gathering place of sorts? I mean, when I hear steps and things like that, I could see guys on BMX bicycles using that plaza as a gathering point, you know, going up steps and things like that, which is, you know, that's very popular.
That was definitely the intention. You know, another sort of line in the RFP was to sort of envision this as a space for all Tulsans. And as like a you know, another example of a public-private sort of space for the city. And for me, actually, I had just been in Mexico City right before Colby and I gave the pitch in the finalist round for this project. And in Mexico City and all throughout sort of Central and South America, plazas play such a huge part of daily life. And they're no matter sort of what space the plaza is in front of, a BMX facility or a theater or whatever, it's a place for everybody in that immediate vicinity to get together. And so that was definitely sort of something that we were both really interested in. So the sculptural installation had to function, you know, on all of these different levels. It had to be these kind of visual, striking landmarks. It had to, of course, in this day and age, be a good backdrop to take pictures in front of. We had to think about the medals ceremonies.
Oh, right. Yeah, because this will be the complete gathering place for BMX events at the facility.
So actually moving into 2022, I mean, Colby and I are hoping to sort of partner again on a different series that looks at the realities of making this plaza a true sort of public space for the city and just kind of considering what that looks like. But that's a little bit further afield.
Yeah. And before we move on, I do want to touch on, again, that note of BMX being a predominantly white sport. I think that some of the folks from USA BMX, to their credit, will mention time and time again that the level of Black excellence in BMX, like, Black folks lead the sport. Like, mm-hmm. It's undeniable. And there are folks like Nigel Sylvester who are just, like, such, like, I think it really speaks to, like, the type of Black art and commerce that we'll be exploring on our third ride. Nigel Sylvester's really taken the sport in really creative directions and really given new life to, like, what it even means to be, like, a freestyler in USA BMX mm-hmm. with such incredible style and, like, talent that even myself, who's not, like, a huge BMX person, I can't not watch, like, 45 minutes of his videos at a time. He's going all over the world doing incredible things, like, again, with such style and talent. And he's not the only one, like, mm-hmm. the only Black athlete in this sport who is just, like, really writing the rules of, like, how you can excel at it and really bring it to the community at large. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, like, yeah, they're building a giant arena, but in all reality, like, there's this much more visible, maybe, you know, to myself and others, exciting part of the sport that actually takes place in the city, you know, in our built environment, mm-hmm. among people and the infrastructure that we do or don't create. Mm-hmm. So
totally.
I think that's just worth noting.
My guests today are Cole Biari, a multimedia artist and community advocate, and Shane Darwin, an installation artist and Tulsa Artist Fellow. They're co-collaborators on the public art project Bridging the Gap and another project, Cycling the Gap, a community-engaged bike ride series beginning Saturday that will pedal through North Tulsa and offer stops along the way that bring interest on sustainability, infrastructure, Black art, and entrepreneurship. And that first ride on sustainability takes place this Saturday. What's on tap?
So we're going to meet at Guthrie Green. All the rides, it's basically three consecutive Saturdays meeting at Guthrie Green at 3 p.m. And so for the sustainability ride, we're going to meet there. Tulsa Hub's going to be there actually an hour beforehand. They're a collaborating partner with us on this riding series. And they're going to teach folks basic bike safety. They're going to offer some basic bike maintenance if you have a bike and you haven't ridden in a while. So come at 2. You know, an hour beforehand, if that sounds interesting to you. But from there, we're going to ride to the Joinery on Denver Avenue in the Heights and meet with Nathan Picard. And the Joinery is a new sort of living building challenge project that Nathan has spearheaded. And it's going to be part community center, part residence for him and his family. And it's the first of its kind in Oklahoma to really, basically, it's a building that produces more energy than it consumes. So it's this kind of experimental project to sort of prove what's possible in sustainable building. And then from there, Bradley Dry, who's a Cherokee Tulsa-based chef, is going to lead us on a wild edible sort of foraging ride to some of his favorite spots in North Tulsa around Reservoir Hill, show us where to harvest wild growing onions and all sorts of things. and yeah, just kind of lead this really kind of cool interpretive tour where you can find edible plants.
And I'll just do a big shout out to Brad, because he is just an incredible human being who's super humble about all of his talent and skill. So it's really exciting to have a chef of his caliber who just happens to love riding bikes and really just aligns so well with this project.
And it takes us into this sort of, you're basically foraging off the land too.
Yeah, yeah. So we really wanted to be intentional about, like, you know, what does a land acknowledgement look like for something like this? Because we you know, Black Wall Street, for lack of better words, takes up a lot of metaphorical real estate in North Tulsa, but it is also Cherokee land. And it's been interesting being at various events where I've listened to Chief Hoskin like mention that, like, hey, you know, like we've committed crimes against the Black community, but also we want to respect and acknowledge that, you know, that there's a beautiful collaboration and solidarity that are at play here. And, you know, we want to continue to cultivate and foster that. So when I initially heard that, I was like, wow, that's incredible. And that's like on such another level than a lot of other entities at play right now in the city with the centennial and those commemorations. This isn't just like a speech before the ride, but, you know, we're working and listening and learning from, you know, a Cherokee chef along the way. It's so much more intentional, and that really takes it to another level to me.
And it sounds like these rides will be beyond just the Greenwood District. You're looking at North Tulsa as a whole, which I think a lot of people have focused on the Greenwood District and the Greenwood area, you know, shoots all the way up to Pine and beyond, mm-hmm. which that's part of the race massacre territory. But there's a lot more North Tulsa than that area. And it sounds like these rides will delve into that over the course of the 3 weeks.
Totally, totally. So Brad's going to lead us on this cruise, and then we're going to end at Emerson Community Garden, which Nathan Picard was also a founder of. And we're going to meet actually with his younger brother, who's the full-time farmer there. And we're going to learn about the mission of Emerson and how it operates and some of his tricks and tips. And because it started out as an initiative to provide sort of farm-to-table food for local restaurants, and then pivoted into this mission to think about how to sustain, what it takes to sustain a single farmer. How much land would you have to sort of use? How much vegetables would you have to pack into this space? And so they're now up to a 40-person CSA operating out of there. And I think when I met with Braden initially, he was saying that if they got up to a 60-person CSA, then that would sort of cover sort of the living expenses and salary for a full-time farmer. And then after we hear from Braden, we're going to end where we started at Guthrie Green and have a tasting of some of the wild forage food that Bradley has prepared ahead of time, of course.
All right. Well, it sounds like a great first start, but there are two other weeks as well. The second week looks at infrastructure. And when I think of infrastructure in Black America and certainly in Black Tulsa, it's a kind of a two-edged sword. It's it can devastate community in the name of progress. What will be the focus of this ride?
So the focus of this ride is really going to look at highways 244 and 75 and the UCAT campus corridor, which Colby had mentioned. And it's really, you know, I mean, when I first moved here and was learning about the Tulsa Race Massacre and then learned that the community rebuilt and then saw this highway that had come through and just completely bisected the community again, it seemed like, you know, just as, if not more sinister. It was like, wait a minute, like this, you know, this community rebuilt and then we have, again, this planned top-down decision to, you know, systematically separate this community from the rest of the city.
Yeah, bulldozed rather than burned.
Totally. And push the residents even further north into Greenwood and really occupy a lot of land in a way that's irretrievable. And so, you know, again, bikes are just such a fascinating tool to be able to, like, get up close and personal to these kinds of landscapes that are really designed by and for cars and really sort of destroy the community fabric on the ground.
Yeah, and I think that's it's an important note that you made, that Tulsa at large really is built for cars and not for people. And that's such an important delineation. I grew up here in Tulsa and my family didn't own a car. So it was all about walking to where we needed to get to or taking the bus. And just being a kid with a lot of energy, it really takes a strain on you when you don't know when the bus is going to show up.
Yeah.
When you've missed it and you know it's going to be a few hours, or you know it came earlier, it comes late. There's something particularly tedious and extreme at the same time going through that process. So it was really interesting when I got a bike and I was able to explore Tulsa, all of Tulsa, at this kind of pace that you can look around as you go. So again, just the highway is one of those huge infrastructure projects that costs so much money that has all of these racial tensions attached to it, because it's, of course, nothing that the Black community or anyone in North Tulsa asked for, right? It was a tool to get downtown workers back to suburbia in maybe 3 less minutes, you know? So it's really interesting to think about how convenience, and it's convenience at whatever cost for one community versus the success and wealth and health of another community. Like, it's pretty incredible. And I really hope that as people are biking with us on this ride, that they are able to internalize that as they, you know, ride along and around and through the highway system.
And I guess on this ride, there'll be some scholars talking about various stops along the way.
Yeah, one of the great folks that came on board for this ride is Carlos Moreno, who just went to press with the Victory of Greenwood project. And he's going to speak at a number of different locations. We're also going to hear from Trent Ziegler from Ziegler's, you know, which operates right there at the threshold of 244. And the back parking lot of Ziegler's looks out over the, you know, this canyon of, I don't know if it's six lanes that go across there, but it's, you know, it's really impressive.
That's another neighborhood, Whittier, which was completely devastated by 244.
And even today, you look at it now and like one side is profiting immensely while the other side
is languishing.
And you may notice that the color of people's skin changes when you go to the north side of that highway. So it's to no surprise. I mean, even if there were good intentions with this project, which it's a wonder why we aren't being much more active in seeking to remove the highway, seeing as how its benefits are so menial in a city like Tulsa, where you can get anywhere you need to get to in 20 minutes. Like, there's just no need for this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I was going to mention there are already new infrastructure opportunities in this community. The Gilcrease Expressway, again, another highway. Bus rapid transit, which hoping to make our bus system better than this, the transit of last resort. Yeah. What lessons can we learn from the past about these current infrastructure opportunities? Is this something you'll be considering?
We'll definitely be touching on it. I mean, the fact of the matter is the interdispersal loop, the IDL, is redundant because of this Gilcrease expansion. Personally, I wouldn't have advocated for any more new highways, but I've heard the interdispersal loop described as the interdispersal noose. And it's because it just doesn't benefit anybody. I mean, like, it's harmed the Black community. It's harmed Crosby Heights. Even parts of Maple Ridge, even though they successfully kept a lot of the highway development outside of Maple Ridge, parts of it are still closed off, and it suffers to some extent because of the highway.
The Pearl District as well.
And I live in the Pearl District, and like, it's a big barrier there. Like, I always have to go under it or around it, and like, it's clear that there's a lot of housing that was lost, and that's still affecting the Pearl District in a huge way. You know, we've created this big bowl, which makes the flooding that much worse, and you know, we have this incredible top of the line flood system. But again, it's like, at what cost? We spent all this money to demolish all this housing that now, you know, the United States is in a housing crisis. You know, it's really interesting. I mean, when we talk about infrastructure, it is inextricably tied to housing, transportation, health, and wealth outcomes. And right now, we're making infrastructure for cars and we're not making infrastructure for people. And the return on investment on investing in people is actually astronomically higher. So it's just, it's really interesting to have this discussion and this activity that brings people closer to understanding, you know, what's a really dense subject that sprawls in every other, you know, every other hot button issue that we have, you know, as a crisis among crises today.
Cycling the Gap, it will be a community engaged bike ride series beginning this Saturday on sustainability, infrastructure the second week, and Black art and commerce on the third week. My guests today are the collaborators and inspirers of this event, Shane Darwent, installation artist, Tulsa Artist Fellow, and Colby Ari, multimedia artist and community advocate. The third week will focus on Black art and entrepreneurism. Give us quickly the highlights for that week.
So we're really excited to be able to stop by local Black businesses and sort of make a tour of that, but also check out a lot of the artists who are really blurring that line between what it means to be an entrepreneur and an artist, especially like hearkening back to, you know, Nigel Sylvester, Black BMXer that we mentioned before. You know, there's just so much that can be done to speak to your history, to speak to your sense of place, and to provide wealth for yourself and for your community, and highlight what it means to be in a city like Tulsa, where there are so many intersections and conflicts of culture, and so much excess and egregious, ornate, beautiful, and tragic happenings, you know? So it's this ride will kind of explore this kind of new wave of Black businesses that we have cropping up in North Tulsa, Greenwood, and we'll be buying some items, gift cards, and raffling those away at the ride. We'll be checking out some new art spaces that, as far as I know, no one has seen yet. So it'll be really cool to see some of those studios and talk with those artists and those business owners and really dig into, like, what does it mean to be a community stakeholder and steward and a business and an artist, you know, by bike through some interesting open air environments. We can explore those, you know, we can get some vitamin D and celebrate these incredible intersections that Black artists and business owners have created through the destruction, you know?
Last word to Shane. What do you hope people will take away from these cycle rides?
You know, I think people that live in Tulsa know how beautiful and rich North Tulsa is as a space. And I just hope that sort of it's an opportunity to celebrate that and to connect sort of what BMX is trying to do with what Colby and I know bicycles in general can do in somebody's life, and just sort of meet other people who believe in those same causes. And, you know, we'd love to sort of have folks who are cyclists but not necessarily paying attention to their local landscape in a certain way come out. We'd also like to have folks who fancy themselves sort of public historians but don't necessarily bike, and sort of really be able to kind of like merge those communities and to celebrate this way of sort of moving through space and paying attention to your landscape and praying for good weather all the same.
Yeah, so. No, you know, and the nice thing about it is, like, you know, the biking community, it's like so many are about putting the miles in.
Exactly.
This is about slowing down, maybe not looking at the how many miles, but looking at what you're passing by as you go.
So true.
What's the best way to get information about the rides themselves?
On my Instagram, at Shane Darwent, there's a link in the bio that brings you to my Facebook page, and that has all of the Facebook events linked. I'm sure it's the same for you, Colby.
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Colby Ari, and, you know, I'm posting it about it on the regular and all the other bike-centric projects that, you know, we can muster.
But if you forget all of that, come to the Guthrie Green starting this Saturday at 3 p.m. and for the next two Saturdays after that.
And 2 p.m. if you don't have a bike, or if your bike's gotten a little dusty, you know, come by. Tulsa Hub is here to help make it work and get you riding.
Get a tune-up. Yeah. Shane and Colby, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Shane Darwent and Colby Ari talking about Cycling the Gap, a community-engaged bike ride series, which begins this Saturday at Guthrie Green at 3 o'clock and will continue on May 8th and the 15th. It's open to all. The rides are about 4 to 8 miles long. And if you don't have a bike, show up at 2 o'clock and the Tulsa Hub will provide a bike, or if your bike needs a tune-up, they'll offer free tune-ups as well. You can learn more by searching for Cycling the Gap on Facebook or your search engine. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.